Punditry was never part of the plan. When I finished graduate school in 1977, I envisioned a life devoted to teaching and research. If I ended up playing any role in public debate, I assumed it would be as a technocrat, someone dispassionately providing policymakers with information about what worked and what didn't. And if you look at my most cited research, most of it is pretty apolitical. The list is dominated by papers on economic geography and international trade. These papers aren't just apolitical, they're mostly not even about policy. Instead, they're attempts to make sense of global patterns of trade and the location of industries. They are, to use the economics jargon, positive economics, analysis of how the world works, not normative economics, prescriptions for how it should work. But in 21st century America, everything is political. In many cases, accepting what the evidence says about an economic question will be seen as a partisan act. For example, will inflation surge if the Federal Reserve buys a lot of government bonds? The clear empirical answer is no if the economy is depressed. The Fed bought $3 trillion in bonds after the 2008 financial crisis, and inflation stayed low. But assertions that Fed policy was dangerously inflationary became, in effect, the official Republican view, so simply recognizing reality became seen as a liberal position. Indeed, in some cases, even asking certain questions is seen as a partisan act. If you ask what is happening to income inequality, quite a few conservatives will denounce you as un-American. As they see it, even bringing up the distribution of income or comparing the growth in middle-class incomes with those of the rich is Marxist talk. And it's not just economics, of course. If anything, we economists have it easy compared to climate scientists, who face persecution for reaching conclusions powerful interests don't want anyone to hear about. Or consider social scientists studying the causes of gun violence. From 1996 to 2017, the Centers for Disease Control were literally forbidden to fund research into firearm injuries and deaths. So what's a would-be scholar to do? One response is to ignore the political heat and just keep doing your research. That's a choice I can respect, and for most scholars, even in economics, it's the right choice. But we also need public intellectuals, people who will understand and respect the research, but are willing to jump into the political fray. This book is a collection of articles, mostly written for the New York Times, in which I tried to play that role. I'll talk later about how I got into that position and what I'm trying to do with it. First, though, let's ask a different question. What's all the politicization about? The roots of politicization. There are many issues in politics, and you could imagine people staking out a wide variety of positions that don't correspond to a simple left-right axis. You could, for example, envision voters who are strongly in favor of gun control, demand aggressive policies to fight global warming, but want to see Social Security and Medicare privatized, if not eliminated. In practice, however, politics in modern America really is pretty much one-dimensional. This is especially true among elected representatives. Tell me where a member of Congress stands on issues like universal health care, and you can predict where he or she stands on climate policy, and vice versa. What defines this single political dimension? It's basically the traditional left-right continuum. How much role do you believe public policy should have in reducing the risks and inequalities of a market economy? Do you want society to be like modern Denmark, with its high taxes, strong social safety net, and extensive worker protections, or like America in the Gilded Age, when laissez-faire ruled? At one level, this axis of contention is about values. People on the left tend to have a concept of social justice along the lines formalized by the philosopher John Rawls. They believe that people should advocate the society they'd choose if they didn't know who they would be, which role they would play. Basically, this moral position is, there but for the grace of God go I, although often without the God part. People on the right, by contrast, view, or claim to view, government intervention to reduce inequality and risk as immoral. Taxing the rich to help the poor, as they see it, is a form of theft, no matter how laudable the purpose. Economics can't tell you what values to have. It can, however, shed light on what to expect from policy that reflects any particular set of values. That, however, is where the politicization comes in. In particular, Opponents of a larger role for government want to argue that such a role is not just immoral, but counterproductive, even destructive. And if the evidence doesn't agree, they attack both the evidence and those producing it. In principle, this kind of politicization could come from the left as well as the right. Indeed, there have been times and places where powerful players refuse to acknowledge, for example, that price controls ever cause shortages, or that printing money ever causes inflation. See Venezuela, a recent history of. Even in America, there are some people on the left who will attack you, okay, me, as a shill for corporate interests, for pointing out that there are multiple ways to achieve universal health coverage, that it can be done while preserving a significant role for private insurance. But given the realities of money and power, in modern America, most of the politicization of everything reflects pressures from the right. After all, while there is a philosophical case for a low-tax, minimal government society, modern conservatism relies less on philosophical persuasion than on the fact there are people who would gain a lot personally if we were to retrace our steps toward the Gilded Age. There may not be many of those people, but they're extremely rich. It's very much in their interest to promote the view that moving in their preferred direction would be good for everyone. And monetary support from right-wing billionaires is a powerful force propping up zombie ideas, ideas that should have been killed by contrary evidence, but instead keep shambling along, eating people's brains. The most persistent such zombie is the insistence that taxing the wealthy is hugely destructive to the economy as a whole, so that cutting taxes on high incomes will produce miraculous economic growth. This doctrine keeps failing in practice, but if anything, has gained an ever stronger hold over the Republican Party.